Knoxville Treasure on the saxophone, leading his own group. On his first recording, that's Lance Owens with Out of Nowhere. Lance is our guest this evening on Improvisations. The 89-year-old saxophone player blew everyone away recently at the Knoxville Museum of Art with his performance that was given directly upon his release from the hospital. Lance, it's great to see you. How are you feeling?
I'd say great after the bout I've had with pneumonia.
Are you over all that?
I think it's about completely recovered.
Because you had your CD release party over at the Knoxville Museum of Art, and I think you just got out of the hospital?
Yep, I came straight from the hospital to the thing.
How did you manage to get the energy to play after being in the hospital?
Well, I guess I just had to force myself to do it.
Yeah. How did it feel, though?
I didn't notice anything much. It's the music was so good till I... Sometimes when people are playing, they're playing so good you don't notice your foot hurting.
And how did it feel to finally release your first record? You're 89, right?
Right.
How does it feel to finally release a record after all these years?
It's just an unbelievable thing. I still don't really believe it.
How did this project come about?
Don Brown told me about 2 or 3 years ago, we're going to record you someday. And that was the culmination on my 89th birthday.
And you've got Keith Brown, David Slack, Kenneth Brown, and Danny Taylor on this.
Right.
What were the recording sessions like? What was the mood?
I had an impacted tooth, which was giving me the blues. And it was just something that I had to force myself to do. And then the rhythm section was so good that I had a hard time playing.
Well, you cut 13 tracks.
Yeah. And they went down just like it, no rehearsal or anything like that.
Did you do everything in one take?
Except for on a clear day, it had to be done over. There were some gross errors in it. And a portion of What's New had to be redone. Now, those were the two tunes that had to be corrected.
That's not a bad track record out of 13 songs, 2 recuts. What are your favorite pieces of music on this record?
I've Never Been in Love Before. That thing is, it sounds like I'm trying not to play. I mean, it really sounds like that. Thank you.
Inspirations for playing music? What got you started to actually pick up an instrument?
In high school, we had a band director who was a pretty nice guy. And, well, really, my parents were the cause of it, because they put me on a violin when I was 6 years old.
How did you like playing the violin? And
thumbs down.
Why not?
Oh, God, I hated that thing. Well, see, all the little boys called you a sissy.
And then what did you switch to after the violin?
Sousaphone.
Was that better than the violin? I guess no one would call you a sissy for playing a sousaphone.
No, they called you a fool for getting out there and in the wind with that thing. Of course, it would carry you all over a ball field, man.
Yeah, you could probably ride that thing down to Chattanooga or something.
Yeah.
When did you switch to saxophone?
One of my, well, really my best friend had an alto, and the school had some horns, so I was fooling around with him. That's how I began to like the reed instrument.
Who were you listening to in those days? What kind of musicians really caught your attention?
Well, the Basic Band was on the scene, and Goodman. Everybody played to sound good then.
Did you like Lester Young?
Golly, yeah, he was the man.
It's hard to top some of those Lester Young recordings.
The one that caused me to pick up a tenor horn was Every Tub. The boy took a solo on that, tore me up.
Up in Johnson City, right?
Right.
What was Johnson City like in the 30s?
Well, a sleepy type place, and of course my people stayed kind of to themselves, like, and I had to go in the evening, you know, and getting them books, and if I wasn't through with my homework by 9 o'clock, look out.
Were your parents fairly strict?
Real strict.
Yeah,
I'm glad of it, though. I've gone to bed many a night sore.
And how long did you stay in Johnson City?
I left Johnson City in 48. Mm-hmm. Of course, I mean, that is for good. Went into the military. I was in Nashville when I went in the military, though.
You went out to the Pacific, right?
Right.
What did you do in the service?
I was strung wire. I was telephone wire and power cables, everything else. Operated diesel-powered power plants, stuff like that.
Did you enjoy being in the service?
Yeah. Well, that's where I learned my trade.
How long were you out in the Pacific?
A couple of years.
Yeah, and then what happened when you got out of the service?
Oh, gosh, I rested a long time and finally decided to go to work. Met some boys in Bristol, and we formed a little band. Of course, if I'd had a cold, I couldn't blow my nose at that time. But anyway, we did run around the area, fooling people into thinking we could play.
Was it Was there much of a jazz audience in those days?
Jazz as such in those days was kind of in the back room. Now, swing music was the thing then. See, Fletcher Henderson started that. And Benny Goodman hired him for his arranger, and that's what put Benny up there. I don't know who arranged for Basie, but whoever did it was a good one.
Were these paying gigs that you guys picked up?
Yeah, $2 and three, never over five. I remember the first job I ever played was at Jess Honeycutt's beer joint on Jonesboro Highway. Made $2.
How long were you expected to play for those $2?
9 to 12. Yeah. Sometimes one.
What tunes did you play?
Sheik of Araby, that was a favorite. And I believe we did Confessing. You know, tunes like that.
Have you ever heard Fats Waller doing Sheik of Araby?
Yeah. Got a copy of it.
What do you think of Fats Waller?
I thought he was, I don't think he was that good a player. Of course, for the time that he was doing his thing, he was a good one.
Yeah.
That Stride piano. But he kept a bottle on, not a bottle, he kept a jar on his piano.
And he would usually empty it before it was all over.
Yeah, he was usually tore up when he was playing.
I read where you actually once backed up Bob Hope.
On occasion, on New Guinea. Yeah, he brought his entourage over there, and there was no band, so we got the job.
How was that working with Bob Hope?
Most thrilling thing my whole career.
How did he treat the musicians or the people he was working with?
Like King George III. He was that kind of guy. Bob was a real nice fella.
At one point, you ended up at Tennessee State University, right?
Yeah, that's where I went to college. Except I didn't get to finish because I had to go to the military. And I was too stupid to go back. No, really, my grandmother talked me into staying at home. I should have gone to school, but I didn't.
When did you end up coming to Knoxville, and what brought you to Knoxville?
The Illusionaires.
That's a great name.
I went to Bristol to hear them, and I told Gibbs, after meeting him, I told him I owned the horn. I didn't tell him I could play it. I said, I'd like to try out for your band. He needed a horn player. So I came to Knoxville on a Sunday night at the Workers' Club and tried out. And he said, you can come on whenever you can make it, come on.
What kind of an impression did you have of Knoxville in those days?
Knoxville to me was pretty close to nothing. Of course, I mean, I hadn't seen a lot of it.
Yeah.
That was it. That was the problem. I hadn't seen enough of it to know whether it was a nice place to be or not. But anyway, I grew to like it after a while.
Was it pretty segregated in those days?
Yeah. Because I remember the first time I saw Bill Scarlett and Skip Lane, those boys, they wanted to come to the Workers' Club. I had to almost wring Jock Smith's neck to get them in.
Well, tell me about meeting Scarlett and those guys.
For some reason, musicians seemed to find each other. And this guy played, I like to listen to him, and he likes to listen to me, and we get together and gel, you know, start doing pieces, arrangements and stuff. Now, I never could write worth a damn, I got to tell you that.
Who are your favorite jazz songwriters or composers?
Way, now you asked me a good one. You asked me a really good one there. I like Johnny Mercer. And I guess just some of the guys who wrote standards mostly, like Iron George and those people. People like that.
When you and Billy...
The heavier stuff, kind of, we'll call it.
When you and Billy Scarlett started actually playing together, did you get any feedback on the having like biracial groups and things like that?
Occasionally we would. I have been to places where we'd go in a restaurant and they say, we can't serve you guys.
How did y'all deal with that?
We went to a drive-in someplace and picked up sandwiches.
Did you notice it when it started changing?
Yeah. Yeah. By the time the 60s came along, you could tell the difference. Of course, there was a lot of envy between players. But it turned out not to be racial. It was professional.
Was there a lot of work to be had in those early days in Knoxville? Could you play regularly?
Yeah, just on weekends. If you had a six-night job, you were something else. You had it made for real. But there were so few of those jobs around. I've had one or two, but that wears you out too badly.
Where did you play in the early days in Knoxville? What clubs or what kind of gigs did you have?
There were clubs on Vine Avenue at Vine and Central. The most popular one was the Workers Club, third floor, right up there at the corner. And a guy named Madison Smith ran that place. By the way, I got to tell you this, we had a police captain named Siler. I don't know whether you ever heard of him or not. But he would raid that place three times every night.
Three times a night?
Every time he'd load up the paddy wagon and come back for another load. but we survived it, though. Sometime we'd have 10 pieces in the band. It'd be girl be up there holding a drumstick. Just anything. They didn't take the band.
So the band was always safe from the paddy wagon.
Yeah. It was fun, and it wasn't that lucrative. If you made $10 playing, you were doing good.
Was it possible to actually live off of the money from playing jazz?
No. I had a day job. Yeah, well, we operated, a friend of mine and I operated a radio repair shop. We did pretty good in that thing because radio was real popular then. You know, if your radio went out, that was, God, you couldn't go home.
How did you get in the radio repair business? What led you to that?
My interest in radio began when I was about 5 years old. In 1931, we got our first radio at home. I actually tore the thing up, almost, because I wanted to see what was in it. But I did get it back together, and they didn't know I'd been in it. But I wound up with this NRI, National Radio Institute.
Mm-hmm.
Sent off for their correspondence course. And I think I did the first 12 lessons or something like that. But anyway, I'd done enough to build my own radio.
What stations did you listen to when you were growing up or a young man? What kind of stations would you tune into?
The half-million-watt WLW. I think you could get that one all over the country, though. And I think we had WJZ, New York, CCO, that was Minneapolis, I believe, someplace up there. And I was picking up stations from everywhere.
Did you ever get into shortwave and ham radio?
Yeah, I have a license.
Can you do Morse code?
Yeah.
Do you ever talk to people around the world, or do you just listen?
I have two or three notebooks full of cards from various countries around the world, far away as Japan, and the last contact I made was New Zealand, I believe.
What do you think makes a great jazz musician?
Being cool.
And how does one become cool?
He has listened to himself enough to know when he's been overdone. Now, it's as far as some of these modern boys, they're really showing out. I don't think music is a show-out thing. Music is meant to be cool, be nice to listen to. When you can't stand to listen to it, you shut it off, don't you?
I do. And the feel, like, you're playing on this new CD, and it's just called Lance Owen. It's a great package, got great photographs in it. You have such a great feel for it.
Charlie Bullard, who once played organ at Dean Hill, told me, because you know how you want to please that crowd down there, because you lose your job if you don't. So he told me to play tasty, play it like you want, like you were listening at to your own self. That's why I'm glad that I was able to learn, you know, chord structure and all that kind of stuff, and keep myself cool on top of that. Because sometimes you're tempted when you listen to, like you're on the stand with a guy who plays a lot of notes, you'll find yourself trying to do it too. And my fingers were always slow because I spent the day with screwdrivers and hammers and stuff in my hand, and my knuckles don't work just the same as theirs did.
I always got the feeling, though, that 100 years from now, people will be listening to more people like Johnny Hodges than some of the, like, guys that play a million notes a second.
Johnny didn't play that like that. Johnny,
he was...
Truthfully, Johnny Hodges didn't play changes. I don't know whether you ever noticed that or not. Being a jazz show host, I'm sure you notice what guys are playing.
Right.
And Johnny just played, he played real pretty. Sometimes he sounded like you should have a pancake under him. It's real syrupy like.
Yeah, he was very sweet at times.
Yeah.
Were there any jazz musicians, let's say, in the 40s and 50s that you really didn't like, you didn't care for their playing?
Yeah, there were some. Who can I could name that I really didn't like? Ben Webster was one. I really didn't go for Coleman Hawkins too much because he had a bad tone. Oh, he could play his brains out, but he would execute like mad, but he didn't sound real good.
Did you like Gene Ammons?
Yeah, Gene was okay. Well, he was a bopper.
When bebop came out, did you get into it, or did you? How did you feel about it when you first started?
I thought it was all right, but that was musicians' music. The average person didn't know what the guy was playing, so that's why it didn't catch on too well.
You are listening to Improvisations. This is Todd Steed. Our guest this evening, Lance Owens. We're having a great time with Lance. We'll be back with more of this interview in just a moment. The 89-year-old saxophone player released his first album just a few weeks ago. It's called Lance Owens, produced by Donald Brown, featuring Keith Brown, David Slack, Kenneth Brown, and Danny Taylor. It's a real treat to have Lance here, so we'll definitely be back with him in the second portion of our show. So stay tuned for that and more. Broadcasting from the campus of the University of Tennessee, this is 91.9 FM WUOT Knoxville, WUOT HD1 Knoxville, and streaming on the web at WUOT.org. We are listener-supported public radio, and we will be right back.